And welcome to the show. I'm your host, Betsy Rosenberg. This is The Green Front, where we report on stories and trends and newsmakers along the green front lines. That is everything from how to be sustainable to loss of species. And we're going to be focusing on that latter category, crisis that has been taking place. You may not have heard about it, the sixth mass extinction underway. If current trends continue, scientists warn us that within a few decades, by mid-century, this century that is, at least half of all plant and animal species on the planet could disappear forever. Now, if you watch mainstream media and the usual commercial news sites and platforms, you probably wouldn't know about that because they don't cover it. But we're hoping that will begin to change. I had a kind of a green letter day or evening last night as I was watching a film that we're going to talk about in our first half with the director, a film called Call of Life on Free Speech TV, where they do air such progressive and important programs as this documentary is. My husband was watching CNN. Don Lemon has a new show called The 11th Hour. And when I saw that debut a couple weeks ago, I thought, well, with a show like 11th Hour, I mean, I know enough to know it wasn't going to be about our environmental, situation being in the 11th hour, but I figured he'd better cover at least, some of the issues, predominantly climate change, on that show. And last night he did. That's the good news. The bad news is, the good news is he had Michael Brun of the Sierra Club on and also Philippe Cousteau on, but he also had Mike Morano on, who is part of the climate denialosphere, denier complex industry, as someone calls it, as Joe Rome from Climate Progress calls it. So we are, I think, reaching critical mass, from critical mess to critical mass, in terms of this groundswell, this undercurrent of extreme weather events and all the things that we are seeing, to really not be ignored any longer. And if you want to know what's going on as far as species extinction, and of course it's all connected to what's happening with our climate, with our oceans, and what we humans are doing to the planet, our life support system, you must see a film called Call of Life. It is fabulous. It's a must-see, and I will start lobbying CNN to air this because they've been doing some important documentaries, the one on killer whales in captivity, blackfish, which has had such a important impact and backlash with singers like Willie Nelson canceling their performances at Marine World because of this. Also, there was the pro-nuclear piece, Pandora's Promise, a couple of weeks ago, and then Don Lemon's show, at least half of it, was dedicated to climate change and what's going on. So it is time to talk about these things, and one of the things you can do is learn about it through film. And without further ado, sorry for the long introduction, I want to bring in Monty Thompson. He is the director of what is really one of the best films I've seen since An Inconvenient Truth, put it right up there with Chasing Ice, in terms of it being a really compelling compilation from some really great thinkers on what's going on and connecting all those green dots. And it's a call to action. If it isn't, I don't know what will be. So, Monty, thanks for being with us. I know that's a lot of talking, but I'm mostly just trying to share my enthusiasm. I'll try to curb my enthusiasm about this film you created, along with a lot of other really great people. You had many, voices on, some of whom I've known, like Paul Ehrlich's been on my show over the years, many people I had not heard of, professors even here in the Bay Area, academics, great thinkers, Joanna Macy, of course, a real sort of mother figure in the environmental movement, helping those of us, eco-activists fight burnout and mm-hmm. despair. You really had a wonderful sampling of really deep, thoughtful commentary. And you also, with the benefit of film, a visual medium, got to show us what's happening. So just take us back a little bit. I know you've been working on films, I guess, for a couple of decades at least. What got you to focus on this particular subject area?
Well, I met the executive producer of this film, David Ulansey, who's actually a historian of religion, but he's been very interested in the biodiversity crisis for many years, and we began plotting to make a film soon after we met.
Now, sometimes it feels like, those of us tuned into our environment, live in parallel universes to, our other life, day-to-day, friends and parents,
yes.
and, your kids' school and people on the job, people you meet at the gym or, just about town, if you will, because some of us lose sleep over these impending crises and looming dangers, and yet it doesn't seem like, you know, mainstream Americans are really, you know, this isn't on their radar yet for some reason. So what I love, among the things I love about your film, is you not only discuss the crisis going on in nature, but also, you know, what's behind it, you know, the human nature crisis, the tendency to, and denial is a word often used in this setting, but I liked the term that you had a couple of speakers address, and that is disassociation, that we are disconnected from nature, and it's all too easy, and our popular culture, you know, kind of facilitates our kind of keeping our heads in the sand. As
well, sure it does. Yes, we wanted to get the top scientific minds that we could interview for the film, but we also interviewed psychologists and historians and religious figures and people that could help us understand, we hope, how we react to things like this and why we react the way we do to things like this. Of course, there's never been a thing like this in all of human history. So it's uncharted territory, and we really didn't evolve to deal with long-term threats very well. We learned to react to the imminent threat, but we have seemed to have trouble as a species, or at least as a society, to read the writing on the wall. The people who spend their lives studying these issues speak with one voice and tell us what is coming, and yet we seem to have trouble dealing with it.
And yes, I mentioned how last night as I was watching your film and my husband had CNN on in the background where they were arguing about climate change, my daughter was actually trying to reach me because she's working on a paper for her media class at NYU on comparing and contrasting An Inconvenient Truth and Chasing Ice, you know, those two other really, you know, hopefully, mm-hmm. you know, turning point films. And I thought, wow, I don't know, this is all really exciting. And, you know, those of us who have been trying to see things reach critical mainstream mass, you know, consciousness,
sure.
you know, are getting hopeful. But the irony is that, you know, it's because we're seeing such destructive weather patterns, because things are happening
right.
so much more rapidly than scientists had predicted. So on the one hand, it's like, whew, about time. But before we can break open the champagne or the organic, you know, wine, we have to say, but wait, there's no time to celebrate because we've got to get on this.
Absolutely. It took a long time for global warming or climate change to sort of make the public radar, and I don't think the extinction crisis really has, even though scientists have been warning us about this for decades now. You know, when E.O. Wilson
talked about it, yes. You read my mind.
Yeah, the well-known biologist E.O. Wilson first described the drivers of extinction and sort of predicting a mass extinction, I think, in the 70s. And he identified habitat loss, invasive species, pollution as the three sort of main drivers, exacerbated by the human population, our out-of-control population growth, and most of all our sort of consumption patterns, our rapacious over-harvesting and over-consumption. So he identified these five drivers. Global warming wasn't even one of them at that time. But it is now, and so in our film we've added that to the list. Global warming alone is expected to wipe out a million species in the next few decades. But the sad truth is, if we were somehow magically able to solve global warming tomorrow, we would still be facing this extinction crisis. It's unprecedented in the history of the planet. There have been mass extinctions before, long, long before human beings evolved. The most recent one was the one that wiped out the dinosaurs 65 million years ago. But the one that we're seeing now is unlike any of the previous ones because it is being caused by a single species. And it won't stop until the drivers, the things that are causing it, are eliminated or mitigated.
And I like how you talked about the direct drivers and then the hidden drivers in the film.
Right. What we call the hidden drivers are the societal and psychological factors that sort of perpetuate the situation and control even how we react to the situation. And things like denial are what we're trying to understand. Of course, course, we all have to live in this society. You know, we all have to get up and go to work in the morning and drive our cars. And, you know, we try and avoid the pointing the finger of guilt at anyone or anything.
Well, the good news is, I guess, Monty, is we can't blame any one, you know, person.
Absolutely.
Or place or thing. It's universal, which, of course, is the good and bad news. Let's take a moment and listen to the trailer. This is for The Call of Life.
There's a mass extinction occurring on the planet today.
There has never been anything like this in human history. You know, humans have never seen anything like this.
In many ways, it's the biggest crisis since we came out of our caves 10,000 years ago, no less.
Our estimates of how many will be lost if we're on this path are pretty good, and they're really big numbers.
We may well lose half of the world's biological diversity.
When we wipe out populations and species of other organisms, we're sawing off the limb that we're sitting on.
During the last 50 years, while I've been involved in conservation, I've noticed that the amount of money going into conservation has increased five times over. And the amount of scientific understanding we've got has increased five times over. The number of citizens involved in this game increased five times over. And yet, our cause is still going down the tubes. The mass extinction is gathering pace more than ever. So what's going wrong? We need to attack the root causes of our problems.
When you think about it, what does our culture offer us in the way of wisdom to deal with any kind of difficulty? Our cultural wisdom is, buy this, it'll make you happy.
The most optimistic scenario is that by mid-century, there will be 9 billion of us, and all of those people want to live as well as we do in the West.
Preventing extinction is going to be a big challenge for human society, but it's certainly one that we're capable of doing.
This is something that we have to do now. It's not something that we can postpone to our children or our grandchildren. It's up to us. This is a responsibility that our generation has uniquely.
Wow. Very compelling trailer, and the movie is more of the same. You know, how did you go about finding the people that you interviewed? Because they really, together, kind of, you know, created a tapestry of opinions that really kind of interspersed nicely, if you can use the word nicely to describe something so scary.
Yeah, the producers and myself reached out to, you know, a lot of different people to be interviewed, and schedules being what they are, and coordinating with people. We didn't get everyone that we wanted, but we got some surprises as well. We were able to get with Richard Leakey, the world famous from the world famous family of paleoanthropologists. Richard Leakey wrote a book called The Sixth Extinction about this very subject. So we were thrilled to have him in the film. Norman Myers, Paul Ehrlich, Stuart Pym, many of the world's most eminent biologists.
And then you also had my friend Reverend Sally Bingham, who has been in the forefront of organizing the religious movement, starting with the Episcopalian community and then going beyond that really across the country to start, you know, practicing what, you know,
that's
we're
right.
We say we're concerned, we say we love God's creation, and we certainly should, however you think we got here. And
right.
Yet
the concept
we don't
of creation care is growing in the religious community, and that's fabulous.
So after all these interviews and after putting together this very compelling film, and we're going to talk a minute about how people can see it, you know, what did you come away with? How do we change our culture? How do we change people's minds? How do we get folks to answer the call?
Well, that's a great question, isn't it? That's what we're asked mostly after our screenings of our film is, what can I do? And at this stage, the most important thing people can do is educate themselves to what's going on and to spread the word. That's why we made the film. We don't have the answers. No one has the answers. And there's not going to be one answer, one size fits all. The answers are going to be local and from different places all over the world, and some will involve technology, but we should be wary of any kind of techno fix. We have a chapter on that in the film as well. But at this point,
that
we just
American optimism sometimes that, you know, we can fix this, technology will come along, and, you know, our kids
right.
will figure it out. That can actually be a negative thing, that optimism in this case.
Well, you know, technology is a double-edged sword. Every new technology that comes along requires some resources. And the thing that we all have to learn, we need a new worldview. We need to understand that there's not an unlimited horizon out there where we just can move and find a new oil field, you know. We're at the point now where 70% of the Earth's surface has been transformed for human use. 50% of all the fresh water that's produced on the planet each year is used by us, leaving the other 50% for all other species. So we really need to just have a better understanding of the closed nature of our planet, of our system here. The only thing that enters the system is sunlight. We already have all the water that we're ever going to have, all of the minerals, metals, and so on that we're ever going to have. So we need to use technology very wisely.
And one of your producers was interviewed on Free Speech TV after the film, and I think it was she who said, you know, the media, mainstream media, just covers, you know, pieces of the puzzle, pieces of the picture, and that's exactly what we're seeing. We're seeing, you know, a mention here, maybe even a segment there, and yet, you know, and this is my big issue, you know, why don't we have a dedicated place in mainstream broadcasting, because that's my background, where we discuss these very urgent and complex issues with people like you interviewed and like I interview on the show, who really, at least if they don't have all the answers, they can, you know, really help us understand what we're facing. And then there are a lot of people out there doing very exciting things, like the Sally Binghams of the world organizing
right.
religion, and climate scientists like Michael Mann trying to get out there, politicians like Sheldon Whitehouse trying to get people in Congress to pay attention to this crisis, and yet there is no dedicated programming space, you know, on a mainstream outlet. I mean, God bless Free Speech TV, but let's face it, the progressive
right.
audience for Free Speech TV probably knows about this, although when it comes to the extinction crisis, there's so much all of us can learn.
Yeah, that's right. It's difficult to you know, make noise against the constant din from the corporate world of, oh, there's no problem here, just buy this. This will fix your
clean coal is our future, you know,
yeah.
with Hallmark-like
right.
music in the background. And when you know what we know, it's quite frustrating. And yet, you know, let's give CNN some credit. They've been trying to do some programming outside the usual mix. And Jeff Zucker, who's running mm-hmm. their programming, has, you know, worldwide recently said they want some more thought-provoking shows on. So, I mean, I was fantasizing about them running Call of Life, you know, with their huge global audience, not just in America. But I thought, since one of the messages is, as it always has to be, we need to look at our not only our population challenge, but overconsumption, especially in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And does that just challenge their advertisers, their sponsors too much? I mean, not even mentioning the fossil fuel industry influence, you know, because every advertisement is buy, buy, buy. You know,
mm-hmm.
is that just never going to happen? And that's the catch-22, isn't it, that, you know, these stories are so huge, climate crisis,
that's right.
crisis, that they're so big. And meantime, the media goes crazy, you know, news covering all these much smaller stories of, you know, some poor person, you know, something bad happening, crime, you know, family of six lost in the snow in Nevada.
Sure.
They're all fine, but they still go on for 3 hours interviewing them. And then these issues that are so critical to our understanding so that we can act, you know, get pretty much, if not ignored, you know, kind of glossed over.
Right. Well, it's yeah, it's hard to monetize these issues, and hard to make them sexy, I suppose.
If Mother Nature was a sponsor, we'd all be gainfully employed, right? And we'd have different kind of programming on. But
well,
if we don't,
the thing we have to try and do, I think, Betsy, is bring environmentalism out of the closet and realize
here.
That environmental concerns are fundamental to every kind of human endeavor. Business of all kinds is rooted in nature, just like everything human beings do is rooted in nature. Resources are at the bottom of every product that we buy, and we need to realize that that environmentalism should be a concern across government and politics and business and everything that human beings concern themselves with, this should be at the root of it.
It should be. And my show, when I started doing this on Air America in 2004, was It's the Environment Stupid. You know,
yeah.
It's Global Warming Stupid, which, you know, Business Week put on their cover after Sandy a year ago, and we interviewed the writer who did that, Paul Barrett. You know, it is happening. It's percolating up there that, you know, I think someone in your film said it's, you know, we're focusing on the actors on the stage when we're not seeing the stage, you know, that's holding up the life support system, that's holding up all the issues of the day, as Danella Meadows famously said a couple of decades ago. You know, it's not another player on the field, it being the environment, it is
right.
The field itself. And that's the challenge, right? How do we talk about the green elephant in the room if we're, you know, focusing on the
right.
elephant's you know, cute babies or something.
Yeah, right.
You know,
we need to start by realizing this thing about ourselves, that we have this problem, that we have a problem with long-term thinking. We can recognize that in our own evolution, and that's what Paul Ehrlich was talking about in the movie. I think he wrote a book on the subject. I think he talks about the bear in the mouth of the cave is what we evolved to be afraid of, you know, something that happens 10 years down the road. We've just never, as a species, ever had to be concerned with such big things as the nature itself changing. You know, who could have imagined that we, one little species, has the power to change nature? And yet that's where we find ourselves. You know, Carl Jung, the famous psychologist, said that the human psyche is now what's in control. The temperature of our oceans is now a function of the human psyche. Whether or not there are such things as tigers in the universe is now dependent on the human psyche. So Jung said, what if something goes wrong with the psyche? We need to learn about ourselves here. This is about human nature.
Yes, it is, and humans' impact on it. I don't know if you saw or heard about Jane Velez Mitchell, who was usually talking about the crime du jour on HLN Headline News, and she recently, after the Philippines typhoon hit, followed by what happened in the Midwest here, she kind of had an eco-epiphany or woke up and smelled the carbon and went on about, oh, my gosh, we are doing this. We are causing this. We humans.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
good for her. I hope they follow up with maybe some dedicated programming. So we are starting to see it. And isn't the ultimate paradox and irony that, you know, again, like you say, these stories are so big and they're happening so rapidly
right.
that the very news or media organizations that usually want to be first on, quote, the big stories are so good at, you know, up until recently, ignoring it pretty much across the board.
Yep.
Yep. So how can people see your film? Because I don't think that anyone can see it and not be impacted and hopefully not go back to business as usual, at least in their lives and habits are concerned.
Oh, yes. We formed a nonprofit called Species Alliance to produce the film. And so you can go to the speciesalliance.org website, and also the movie has a website, calloflife.org, where you can order DVDs and find out about other ways to see the film.
An interesting title, Call of Life. Life really, Mother Nature is calling us loudly and saying, you know, it's not
that's
nice
right.
to fuel me and wake up and pay attention, and yet we're still asleep at the wheel pretty much.
Well, as you said, there is a nascent change happening in human psychology. People are expanding their awareness in new ways, and we talk about this in the movie. We call it The Shift, and it's a realization that we are responsible, and it's kind of a widening of our sphere of caring.
And there was I was taking notes. I took 10 pages of notes watching your fabulous documentary. One, I think it was Derek Jensen who just had so many insightful comments. Everyone did, but I think it was he who said, "If space aliens were doing this to us, we would be fighting back."
Isn't that a great metaphor? Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah,
you know,
if we were being invaded from outside, we would see the threat. But the threat is coming from inside, and we just shine it on.
Yeah. Not to mention how much energy and money and attention is focused on sports in this country. You know, those big battles.
Oh, sure. Don't get me started.
Yeah. Oh, I know. You know, it's sometimes funny, but it's only funny because it's, you know, so sad and scary that we don't see this. And so I guess I'm kind of cautiously optimistic based on, you know, what we're seeing, including your film, that maybe we're reaching critical mass, or at least, like I said, the critical mess is becoming hard to ignore.
Yeah, and the more people, you know, can bring their environmental concerns out of the closet, as I said, and take it to work with you, you know, and when you're standing around the water cooler at work, don't be afraid to talk about these issues. They're real, and they need to be addressed, and we need to spread the word.
Hear, hear. When I do speak to younger people, college and high school students, and just general audiences, I say, go out, you know, don't let what happens in this room, if you've learned anything, stay in this room. Go out and be green ambassadors, all of you.
Exactly.
This is not something that, you know, is only for environmentalists to talk about and work on. God knows our government is not leading the way. You know, businesses, you know,
that's
getting
right.
It, but slowly.
And even our environmental organizations, forgive me for saying so, are falling short, you know.
I could not agree more, you know, and they've not really come together and seen the need for, you know, trying to get some coordinated media effort. They either don't think it's possible or it just hasn't occurred to them, but this is, again, what I've been working on. So not to toot my own horn, it's just nice to find a kindred spirit who gets it and who's
well, we appreciate the good work
job
that you're doing.
Thank you, thank you. And it was Shara Van Berg. She was the one producer interviewed afterwards. And
that's right.
I just can't thank you enough for this contribution to the conversation. I'm going to do everything I can to get it out there. Are you planning to try to get it distributed? Like Chasing Ice managed to get into quite a few mainstream theaters.
Well, we don't have a theatrical distribution planned, but the movie is distributed by Specialty Studios, and the video project is their educational arm. So the movie is in schools and universities. Some schools are even building a curriculum around the movie. So it is making some waves in academia, at least.
Yes, and I also frequently say here that we can't just leave it up to our kids and the next generation. That
absolutely.
We
don't have time, Betsy. You know, there's not time to wait for the children of today to
That's right,
you know,
and we need all hands on deck in the meantime so we can start digging out. One other person who spoke stood out, who was speaking in your film, Dr. Alan, is it Kenner? He's
mm-hmm.
a psychologist who writes about consumer culture.
That's
he
right.
had some really, you know, insightful comments about, you know, we have such affluence and abundance and a luxury economy, you know, in this country. And that's why, you know, for us to not be leading the way out of, you know, the abyss,
right.
you know,
well,
is shameful, if not criminal.
Right.
Because we have such a large, heavy, you know, ecological footprint. And then we haven't even discussed what do we tell other developing countries now that they want to have cars and TVs and air conditioning.
Absolutely. And these are difficult questions, but that is at the base of it. Our human population is just growing so fast, and you never hear anything in the popular culture from environmental organizations or anyone else about the need for population control. Now, you know, we don't really know. No one really knows the number of people that the Earth can support sustainably, depending on what technologies we have available and so on. But I think all of the experts that we talked with agreed that number would be well below where we are now.
Exactly. The carrying capacity right now, we would need, if everyone lives like Americans, we need something like four or five more planets. Which
exactly.
As I say, last time I checked, we don't have them on standby. I don't think they can print out another planet, you know, in the 3D printer category, you know. And I guess the only thing more daunting, just to wrap up our conversation, because I think I could talk to you all day and not run out of questions and comments, because, again, your film really speaks just volumes in terms of what we're up against. The only thing more daunting than tackling all these interwoven and urgent issues is thinking about how much worse they'll be if we continue to ignore them.
Well, that's for sure. The you know, ecosystems, like all systems, have this tendency to flip, and that's the real threat from mass extinction. It's not that we'll lose this or that species. Of course, every species is precious and irreplaceable, but the real threat to us is from ecosystems that could go into catastrophic collapse. And there's no going back once that happens. There's no predicting it, and there's no returning. So we have to catch this before it happens. We have to.
Absolutely, and one of your chapters is called Grief, and you know, I try to liken it, having lost a few members of my immediate family, you know, early on, tragically. You know, people, until they really experience the loss of someone very close to them and realize how permanent that is, even if though it's obvious, but the feeling that it creates in terms of changing your life forever and how we'd give anything to spend 5 minutes with that loved one. What if this happens across the board? If we lose nature, and then it always is too late. Once something is gone, it's gone, or a person, or nature. That's really the bottom line, I think, most compelling message. While we can still act, let's get everybody talking about this stuff. And to ignore it, you know, mainstream media to ignore it and continue to, you know, have programmers say, oh, I don't think we're interested in that, or people won't watch it, or the ratings wouldn't be good. You know, that's just irresponsible.
It's not just another issue among many. I mean, it's fundamental.
Hello, there's not even any sports, you know, on a dying planet that will be worth much, you know, or business news or all the other stuff, celebrity news, you know. But let's face it, whatever, you know, people think is important is going to pale. But by the time that's obvious to most, if we don't change course, then, you know, in terms of communicating this, it won't much matter. But then it's too, but we can say, I told you so, we told you so, we told you this is important. But, you know, it won't matter if our children are suffering like we've seen people already in this country with the extreme droughts, fires, floods, tornadoes, twisters, typhoons. You know, it's a human question, and it's in our best interest to address it. We just need to get some enlightened programmers, you know, with a massive audience, you know, millions of viewers or listeners to understand this. And I haven't even talked about the other side out there in greater number, the Rush Limbaughs of the world, Sean Hannity's, you know, trying to make us look like a bunch of wacky tree huggers and would like to see us, you know, just go away. And when it starts snowing, they say this proves global warming is not real. You know,
Shame.
Okay, I've kept you long enough. Thank you so much, Monty. Really appreciate it. I want to urge everybody to go to the website, calloflife.org or speciesalliance.org, and look at the filmmakers. These are really qualified people, and the folks that they interviewed are just top-notch. So I can't say enough great things about it.
Thank you so much.
Find it, have a screening in your area, and let everybody know, because it's later than we think, and we all have a stake. So we'll be right back. We'll be speaking with a professor, Professor Michael Kraft. He is from University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. That's a place I visited and was happy to speak at a couple years ago. He's written an article about how Congress really needs to get off its you-know-what and take action on legislation. We'll be right back with that interview.